Hi, I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for joining me on The Wine Road. On this podcast, I catch up with Susie Selby of Selby Winery. I spoke with her a couple of years ago. You'll hear some of that conversation, and then we together again for an update in January. We also touched upon her appearance at the upcoming Zinfandel Experience 2017 in San Francisco. In our first conversation, I joined Susie next to the fountain outside her tasting room in Healdsburg, Sonoma County. The story of her journey to become a winemaker has notes of loss, soul searching, inspiration, determination, and ultimately, success. She was introduced to fine wine at an early age, which led to her desire to get into the business with her father.
I was very, very fortunate in that I grew up in a somewhat privileged family. My father was a very famous surgeon in Dallas, Texas. He was a war hero and came back from Vietnam and started practicing medicine and, you know, truly was one of the top spine surgeons in the world. And he started collecting wines. And so, again, I drank a lot of international wines and had exposure to fine food as well.
At a young age?
Yes, at a very young age, especially in Texas. So I went to Europe with my parents and had some exposure there as well. But, you know, honestly, we started drinking wine when we were pretty young at holidays and things like that. But I probably started appreciating wine when I was about 16. And he was passionate about wine and sort of passed that on to me.
What I found inspiring about your story is that after you received an education in business, you decided that the wine industry was something you wanted to do with your father, so you learned the business from the ground up. How did that come about?
He and I decided that we would start Selby, but he wanted me to learn hands-on how to do it to make sure that we could be successful. And so I started working in a tasting room, and I learned how to drive a forklift and became the best forklift driver. And the reason that's significant is because I was able to become the cellar master at a winery. And because I had a key job, it was easy as a female to manage a group of guys, which can be challenging. And so I was the first one there in the morning and the last one to leave at night, and learned how to make wine. And the first vintage of Selby was in 1993. And my dad actually was drinking all of our profits while he was alive. But he was a, you know, truly remarkable man. And I had been exposed to a lot of French and Italian wines growing up. So we started with Chardonnay and then Pinot because we were both such, he was a big Burgundy person. And went from there. We started with 150 cases of Chardonnay, and that was the 1993 vintage.
So how long did it take for you to go from being a cellar rat to actually making your first bottle of wine?
Well, I was still working in the cellar when I made the first vintage, and it was, to some extent, it was experimental. And when we started the brand, when we started with our 150 cases of Chardonnay, I knew the basics of making wine, and again, it was a small production, of course, but stylistically, we couldn't decide what to do because back in the 90s, the big buttery, oaky Chardonnay was in, and we didn't like that style. And so I limited the malolactic. You know, I knew basically how to make wine. And, you know, our whole strategy was that if we couldn't sell the wine, then we'd have to drink it. And so
that's why he was drinking a lot of it.
Yes, he was drinking a lot of it. But yes, if you can't sell it, you're going to drink it. So you want to make sure it's something that you love.
Well, if you're putting your heart and soul into it and you're happy with what you're making, that's certainly the foundation for creating a successful wine.
Well, it's, I mean, I had, again, people who like my wines typically like, don't like traditional California type wines. But it's, you know, the public's been good to me, and critics have been good to me, even though I don't really submit very much, but it's nice.
Well, sadly, after you and your father started the winery, he passed away.
He did. It was sad, and it was quite shocking. And honestly, my mother really thought I should not stay in the wine industry and that I should move back to Texas and get married, and I should have listened to her. But I decided to stay in the wine industry, and And my father, he never invested in the winery, but I did inherit a little bit of stock. And financially, it was very difficult because I really didn't have the finances to do what we had originally wanted to do. So I rented a warehouse and got an equipment loan and got a line of credit for some grapes and really just did it on a shoestring budget and was able to survive all these years. But it was sad. It was very, very sad when he died. And I've hung in there and I still have no partners or investors. So I'm proud of that. So that's been nice.
And now in retrospect, you must be glad that you're not some bored housewife with a couple of kids running around and screaming and yelling.
You know what? I would love to be a bored housewife.
Okay, I have to interject here to say, remember she said that. We'll address it in the next segment. Okay, now back to the Fountainside interview.
But it's been rewarding. And the big joke, when my mother came out, she said, you know, look at you, you're on a forklift. And my mother's a wonderful person, don't get me wrong. She just felt like I was not utilizing my education. I went to Vanderbilt. I have an MBA from George Washington. And I was basically driving a forklift and working in a cellar.
But that's not unusual these days anymore.
No, not at all. And a couple of years ago, I did a wine dinner in Dallas, and my mother was there. And I let her know that I was talking about the history of wine, which I love to talk about, you know, 4,000 years of fermentation. I mean, that's one of the things I love the most about the industry is, you know, it's art, science, nature, and history. And I did remind her that she should be very happy that I chose the second oldest profession.
not the first.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, she's very proud now, but it's a neat family thing.
I'm talking with Susie Selby of Selby Winery in Dry Creek Valley. Her mother is no doubt very proud of her. Not long after the release of Susie's first Chardonnay, the White House started serving her wine. Since then, it's been served for 75 different occasions under 3 different presidents. That's more appearances than any other winery. That's astounding. A number of the distinguished letters from the White House are proudly displayed on the walls of her tasting room in Healdsburg.
Yeah, so I was very excited when that happened. And actually, the Clintons were the first to enjoy it. And it's been served throughout the Bush administration and now in the Obama administration. So, you know, I'm very fortunate.
You make a variety of good wine, but the one that stood out to me is your Sangiovese.
You know, I'm excited for you to say that. I get the fruit from Cecil Deloche, and actually Jason Deloche makes a wine, this Sangiovese for Hook and Ladder, and his is fabulous as well, but I'm fortunate to have access to the vineyard. And evidently, the cuttings and the clone is something that Cecil personally picked out himself many years ago, and so Jason and I are the only two making wine from that vineyard, and I'm privileged to have such a good relationship with that family, and I love that wine. It's the perfect food wine. It's got good acidity.
Like you said, it was a tough road to get there and to get to this point, but what a great opportunity to be in that position.
Oh yeah, and the most important thing is having good relationships with growers and finding interesting small lots, and again, wine club members and for a tasting room. I do just other interesting varietals. And I do the usual suspects. You know, I'm very well known for Zin and Chardonnay, and one of my favorite wines is a single vineyard Pinot Noir called Caligari. And the Caligaris are also like family to me, so I feel very lucky to get their fruit because I think the only other winery they sell to is William Selyem. So, you know, lucky me, truly, to even have access to that.
I hear people really love your Bobcat Zin.
Well, Bobcat is this crazy cult wine that I have. We actually have people who just buy Bobcat and come in for the Bobcat. The reason I call it Bobcat is because I actually saw a Bobcat in the vineyard one day. And, you know, as a side note, we're seeing more and more wildlife, I think, because people are going to more sustainable farming and using less chemicals. So you see more wildlife in the vineyard. But yes, I maintain that I saw a Bobcat. However, I did have a beloved 26-pound cat named Bob. And the tasting room staff is convinced that that's where the Bobcat came from. So the current theory is that I named it after my cat, Bob. He was such a great cat, I would still do that. But it's a Zin that people go absolutely crazy over.
26 pounds, huh?
Yes. Well, Bob was 26 pounds. The Zin is 17% alcohol. So everything, you know, regardless of what the origin of the story is, everything's a little over the top.
Okay, we're going to step away following that story of Susie's Bobcat wine. And through the magic of radio, we'll pick up the conversation a year and a half later on the same topic. Don't miss that when On the Wine Road continues. Now, let's get back on the wine road and to my conversation with Susie Selby of Selby Winery in Healdsburg. Just before the break, we were discussing her Bobcat Zinfandel from our conversation well over a year ago. Now, we're jumping ahead to just a few weeks ago, and I continue the conversation by asking her if she's planning on serving the Bobcat at the Zin Experience.
Oh, absolutely. Bobcat is our most popular wine in the tasting room, and our ZAP members would be terribly disappointed if we did not have that with us.
And you have the old vine Zinfandel and also the Zinfandel Port.
Yes, so we will have all three of those at the ZAP event, and we're looking forward to it.
It's a nice little triumvirate because the old vine Zin is dry and spicy. The Bobcat has a little more fruit sweetness to it, and then you have the Port.
Yes, and then the Port, of course, is high alcohol. Actually, a little bit less sweet than most ports, but I think it's the perfect port for cigars, which is what originally inspired me to make a port.
Did your dad smoke cigars?
Well, actually, my dad spent all of his summers in Cuba, interestingly enough. He grew up in South Bend, Indiana, but his dad had a passion for Cuba, so he used to spend, I think, 2 months every summer down there and loved cigars. A little snobby about cigars.
Oh, was he? Okay, so yeah. He was quite the cigar connoisseur.
Yes, he was actually, he may even be more of a cigar aficionado than he was a wine aficionado, but he loved cigars.
Now, were you thinking about him when you made the Zinfandel Port?
I was. I think I started smoking cigars when I was 15 or 16 and loved it. Terrible. But you know, cigars are, it's interesting. Like wine, cigars have a very interesting history and interesting flavors. And, of course, a lot of tobacco and flavors you get from cigar are always related back to wine. That's very common.
Right. And like wine, they're perfect for gatherings and chatting with friends and family, and they go so well together.
Well, unless you know, I certainly understand there are people who don't like it, but I like cigars. And again, it's a very social, it's a social thing, like wine.
It is,
it's exactly what you're saying.
Are you still smoking cigars?
I do occasionally. Hmm. I have to be careful because they do adversely affect my palate for a few days. Right. So I am, but it's a nice social thing to do, and I do like higher end cigars, of course.
Well, you've been
chip off the old block,
right?
Right.
For some reason, I'm picturing you in a flapper dress in the 20s, smoking a cigar with a glass in the other hand.
Oh, exactly. That's me. That's what I want all of the audience to envision right now.
instead of the bored housewife at home with the kids.
Exactly. That's the Selby image. That's what one should envision.
So have you grown beyond the desire to be the housewife and mother, or do you still have those pangs?
Actually, now I am Aunt Susie, and it's the most fabulous role any person could have. And I'm Aunt Susie to all of Healdsburg. So it's an honor.
The whole town.
Yes, to the town, I'm Aunt Susie.
Okay.
So it's quite an amazing, fabulous, blessed thing to be.
Yeah, you're beloved.
Well, I think I spoil them. I think I buy their love, but they still love me.
Whatever works.
I know. Exactly. Whether I buy it, the outcome's the same. So that's the important thing.
You know, I can't believe since we first talked, and it was not that long ago, but 23 years now that you've been doing this, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Quite a long time.
Does it seem like that?
No, it doesn't. Although the industry has changed a lot since I started. And it's it used to be more farmers and Sonoma County. And I think even though there was certainly some competition. There's a bit of a spirit of cooperation among all the different wineries, and there was something for everyone collectively. And now I think the profile of the person who is a winemaker and owner has changed significantly because it requires so much capital. So it's different. It's
but you skirted around that.
Yes, I skirted around it by not having capital.
and you succeeded.
Yes, I did not know what I was doing, which is frequently a very good thing.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yes, it was definitely bliss. I had no idea what I was getting into, but because I had limited funds, I had to do what I had to do, like all along the way. I rented a warehouse. I didn't buy a building. I didn't have vineyards. So, you know, ultimately, it's probably a good way to create a brand. But, you know, at the moment, I was just doing it because I had no other options.
Yeah, you took the hard road, but in retrospect, you're quite proud of that, I imagine, and happy you did.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my appreciation level for where I am today is extremely high. The path of least resistance was closed. It was closed in the 90s. So that was my only choice.
And you didn't have Google Maps to get you around any other thing?
I kept looking for it, but that path, it must have been covered with brush or something.
Well, you are a poster child, though, for the health benefits of wine, because you still look like you're 32.
Oh, in my flapper dress. Thank you. I appreciate
right.
that.
The cigar.
You're so kind. I know.
Well, I'll look forward to seeing you at the media event for the Zapp Zinfandel Experience 2017 on Thursday. And you're also doing the really nice dinner. Is that Friday night?
Yes, there's a dinner on Friday, Jeff. And the way they have it set up is that I think everybody who attends is at a table with a winemaker, and they can request their winemaker. And so we actually get a list of the attendees as well. So it becomes more like a personal up-close event.
Sure.
And that's fun. So we can tell our stories and entertain. And I know that the food is going to be incredibly fabulous. Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind.
I'll give the information in case they choose to go and have you sit at their table.
Well, and I have to tell you that I have certainly had a lot of Zin paired with wine dinners in the past, but it's the most difficult wine I make to pair with food. And I'm really curious to see how this dinner transpires because, you know, normally the Bobcat or the Old Vine, it's either paired with braised short ribs or dessert of some kind or sometimes cheese, sometimes chocolate. But it's not a wine like Merlot or Cabernet or Malbec or Sangiovese that can be paired with a much broader variety of cuisine.
Do you have to do the Zinfandel?
Well, I am assuming that Zin is going to be part of every course, but I may be incorrect in that. So
you might have some other wine in your back pocket, just in case.
Perhaps. That's not a bad idea. That's funny. Sneak in a little Chardonnay. I'll put some Chardonnay in a thermos or something.
Or your Petit Verdot would be good.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a fun little vineyard. I will have other wines. Thank you, Jeff. That's a fabulous suggestion. Now that you've mentioned that, or Pinot.
If you get in trouble, don't say, well, Jeff Davis told me I could bring it.
Exactly. I had permission from the media. You know how important they are. We have a tasting just for them. So, yes, I have a strategy, a plan, and Chardonnay in a thermos. It's perfect.
She cracks me up. The always pleasant and fun gal, Susie Selby of Selby Winery in Healdsburg. Sometimes you'll catch her in the tasting room. You can find their great list of varietals at selbywinery.com. It's that simple. You can taste her Zinfandel at ZinX 2017. Now, if you're interested in the Friday night winemaker's dinner and auction that Susie will be attending, you can find details on that, the grand tasting, and other events at zinfandelexperience.org. Now, this is all happening prior to February 26th, 2017. Anytime after that, you'll have to taste her Zinfandel and other varietals in the tasting room. She and her fantastic staff will enjoy meeting you. And you can learn more about this show at onthewineroad.com. I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for listening to this podcast of On the Wine Road.